The Godfather came out in 1972, which happened to have been the beginning of the end for real mafia power in this country. La Cosa Nostra, as it was called when I was a kid, is now going, practically gone. But the culture is rife with gangsterism. I don't need to tell you there's a show called The Sopranos on HBO that's been getting a lot of attention. There are arty gang movies, like last summer's Road to Perdition, about Irish gangsters in Chicago during the Depression. And this winter, Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York, about Irish gangs in New York in the 1860s. And in music, the whole subgenre known as gangster rap is still thriving. Americans still can't get enough of their wise guys in all kinds of ethnicities. David Remnick is my guest today in Studio 360, and we're going to look at why gangsters remain so intriguing, not only to the public at large, but to the writers and musicians and filmmakers who immortalized them in the popular culture. David Remnick began his career as a reporter for The Washington Post, and in 1992, he joined the staff of The New Yorker. 4 years ago, he was named editor of The New Yorker. He also wrote Lenin's Tomb about the final days of the Soviet Union, for which he won a Pulitzer Prize, and the acclaimed biography of Muhammad Ali, King of the World. David Remnick, welcome to Studio 360.
It's good to be here, Kurt.
Why do you think that writers and filmmakers, creative artists of various kinds, are so drawn to the gangster myth and the idea of mobsters?
I think there's a lot of reasons. For one thing, it heightens reality. If you have an ordinary family, you've got what we all have. If you have a mob family, you have the ordinary family to the nth degree, where loyalty is outsized, where retribution is outsized. Also, you get your ego kicks and you get your id kicks. You have the guilty pleasure of watching people commit violence and mayhem.
That's the id kick, I guess.
You bet. And have too much money for no work, or at least perverse work, and sex of all kinds, and all that goes with mob life. And then at the end, they get it in the head. So the moralistic ego side, or superego side, pays off. And in the old mob movies, the government was so afraid of the romanticization of mafia families that they literally had them insert scenes, as with the Howard Hawks movie, Scarface, of either judges giving very censorious pronouncements about the criminals or actual warning labels on the movies before and after. But that, of course, has drifted away.
So those were really the first anti-heroes. We think of the 60s and 70s in film being the great era of the anti-hero in movies, but those guys in the 30s, the gangster characters in the movies of the 30s were really the first ones. Even if the Hays Code made people kind of cross their fingers and pretend they weren't heroizing and glorifying these guys.
Well, it's a very glamorous thing in films. And as we know, that certain kind of genres breed more movies, that once the cowboy movie took a kind of form in the movies, well, the imaginations, or sometimes limited imaginations, of other screenwriters and directors led to other cowboy movies. But cowboys, like mobsters, also have a heightened reality. There's all those same, in many ways, the same themes and thematics come out of those too. The mob movie really reached its early zenith in 1931-32 with Scarface and Public Enemy. That happened to coincide with really terrific directors. God knows we've all seen dozens and dozens, and if not hundreds, of terrible mob movies.
Is The Godfather, which I confess to you, I watched for the first time in my life last weekend, is The Godfather the best film?
I can't believe that.
I know. Is it the best gangster film in the genre? Because I loved it. I expected to love it, and I did.
Well, I watch The Godfather, and some of it strikes me as full of hooey. But there's not that much of it.
Exactly.
It's really, I had a thrilling experience not long ago. My oldest child is a 12-year-old boy, and I've always been a little hesitant to push him too hard on the violence of movies and so on, but I got really tired of seeing some of these kids' movies. And I said, you know, let's watch The Godfather, see what you think. And he doesn't like violence in movies. He doesn't like scary stuff. And he was very anxious. I put the disc in and we watched for about 15 minutes and he said, could you stop it for a second? And I thought, well, he's not going to want to watch anymore. The movie's freaking him out. And he turned to me and he said, this is the best thing I have ever seen. And for some reason, The Godfather and Godfather Part II have this pull. I wouldn't say it's solely male, but maybe it's maybe more male than not. It's about, you know, in a heightened version, about family and about a social group with mayhem and spaghetti.
Although it was certainly more about the mafia than The Sopranos is. As you've said in a piece you wrote, great piece you wrote a couple of years ago in The New Yorker, The Sopranos really isn't about the mob. It's about a small businessman and his family.
Yeah, and this mob family, which is meant to be in Essex County, New Jersey, is at the very end of it. At one point, Tony Soprano in the first season said, I'm coming in at the end. He's very self-aware that this is it. You know, his daughter is at Barnard and his son is a kind of a screw-up who's got to go off to military school, but neither one of them are going to go into the family business, and he's pretty much relieved about that. In some ways, the fate of the Sopranos reflects the fate of the DiCavalcante family in Union County, New Jersey. And these were a bunch of guys stealing some cars, and they were caught on tape, and they were just the worst mobsters in the history of the La Cosa Nostra. And at one point even, these wiretaps overhear a couple of guys in the mob talking about the Sopranos and comparing themselves to Paulie Walnuts and all the other Fat Pussy and all the other characters.
You wrote in your piece in The New Yorker that The Sopranos may be the last gasp of the mafia film. And I wonder if that's really true. I mean,
I'm sure I'm wrong.
Well,
I'm sure
go.
I'm wrong.
In retrospect or just because you assume you're wrong in general?
Well, one has to add the piece somewhere. And the piece, as I remember, it ends with the great line, Scarface is shot.
Scarface in the 30s, not Pacino Scarface.
Edward G. Robinson, Scarface, and he's clutching his chest, and his final words are, Mother of Mercy, is this the end of Rico? Now, ironically, Rico is his name, but Rico were the racketeering statutes that began to turn the tide against the mafia. It's too tempting, I think, for screenwriters and storytellers of all media to go back to the mafia, and no doubt The Sopranos will breed inferior imitators. David Chase, though, whose invention The Sopranos is, and is this kind of saturnine genius with a TV background, has no intention of going any further with the mob. I think he told me that his next movie, a feature-length movie, would be about Christian evangelical rock and roll. We'll see how he turns out on that.
The editor of The New Yorker magazine, David Remnick, is my guest today. I'm Kurt Anderson.